You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Friday morning to you. Mike McNamara for Friday edition of All Marine Radio. Here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. I hope you're having a good morning, wherever you are. I am. My voice a little worn. From speaking yesterday, so I apologize for that, as well as for clearing my throat a little bit earlier, but such is life, right? Have to tell you that I've done this a lot, right? If you've listened to the show for a while, I've done post-traumatic winning for a year and a half now, and something happened to me yesterday. Never happened to me. And so, which is kind of odd that, you know, I've done so many different iterations of this. And so, you know, I know what to expect. I know what's going to happen. As my oldest son told me once when he was little, he was going to, I want to say his fifth school in 6 years. And so he was eating breakfast at the table, probably cereal, and I was getting ready to go to work, and I looked at him, and I said, "So you ready to do this again?" And he just looked up, he looked up at me, and he wasn't more than 10 years old, and he said, "Yeah," and I said, "You're excited," and he said, "Yep," and he looked at me, and he said, I know in my head how it will go. And I remember thinking how funny that was from a little kid, right? And I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "How's it going to go?" He said, "Well, in the morning, I'll be the new guy, you know, and everybody else will know each other except, you know, the new kids. And everybody's nice to you." He said, "And then we'll go to lunch. And I won't know too many people, but so, you know, I'll have lunch with somebody. But then we'll go to recess and we'll play sports and I'll do good in sports and then I'll have friends. Right? I mean, how funny as a little kid. And I said, is that how it works? And he says, yep. And I said, all right, man, you sound like you got it under control. And he just, you know, he's sitting there eating his cereal, staring at the back of his cereal box, like just, you know, telling you the way the world is. And so, so in my head, I know how these things go, right? I know the power of what I do. I've learned that in the last year and a half. And more than ever, as I continue to do this, I'm convinced that it is the way to do it. You know, I used to be content with, you know, there are many ways to skin a, you know, to skin an alligator or a possum or whatever the hell you want to eat. But this is my way. I'm not like that anymore. If you don't speak to them in their language, if you don't present these concepts so that they make sense to them, you are wasting your time. You are wasting your time. And it's so funny because they come up and they comment, whether about the profanity I use, like, sir, this is awesome. I'm like, thanks. And I've never heard anybody say the F-bomb like that in public like this. I said, but that's how we talk. I know, but nobody does it like that. He said, you know, it was cool, but you just talk to us like we were like your friends. I said, you are my friends, man. You're my tribe. You're my people. This is our language, right? So why would I stand up here and act like a stiff if I wanna touch your heart? And he said, we should have more classes like this. So I'm more convinced than ever, for a variety of reasons, that being one of them. And then the other thing, that's a normal experience for me, right? I have that experience on a regular basis. The other experience is meeting new people who've heard this. I had a guy come down yesterday, and he couldn't talk. He's standing there with his face mask on. He's a big guy. And he's got tears running from his eyes into his face mask. And he can't, every time he tries to talk, he can't. And again, that's not a foreign experience to me, right? As people for the first time begin to share something with you. And so we stand there. And he tells me this terrible story about he's an amateur athlete and he's working on, you know, becoming a professional athlete. And he's got a manager and, you know, the manager takes all his money essentially and leaves him high and dry. And so this another guy befriends him, mentor, blah, 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 blah. He's out to dinner with the guy's family. Out to lunch with the guy's family. Guy gets up, excuses himself to go to the bathroom. But he actually goes in the parking lot and he gets in his car and he drives his car into the restaurant, kills his own daughter, kills his daughter-in-law. This guy, but for the grace of God, doesn't get killed. And then a month later, one of his best friends is murdered. And then the week after the murder, another friend commits suicide. And he said, I couldn't take it anymore. And so the story goes on. I mean, it's just, I mean, you hear these stories that are so full of pain. And that was one of a bunch that I heard yesterday. And that's normal. Okay. That's normal. Let me tell you though, that what wasn't normal yesterday that happened to me again, now a year and a half after I started doing this. I had lunch last night with a Marine I met 8 months ago. who was abused by family member, sexually abused by a member of his family. And at that presentation, it was in 29 Palms. Might be longer than that. It was probably closer to 9 months now that I think about it. But anyway, everybody leaves. Did it at the Chow Hall in 29 Palms. Everybody leaves. And then I'm packing my shit up to go home. And all of a sudden, this one Marine comes walking back in. And, you know, I didn't know if he was doing something else in the Chow Hall. So I just kept doing what I was doing. And he comes walking over to me. And he says, "Do you have a minute? Could I talk to you?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And he said, "I've never told this to anyone." I said, "Okay." And he said, and he tells me a story. He said, "I've been sexually abused by somebody in my family for years." And, you know, with tears in his eyes and what. And he says, and they told me that if I ever talked about it, they would make it worse. So 9 months later, he's told everybody in his family. He's engaged. And he's happy. And he's doing good things. He helps other people. And so, and then also yesterday, another Marine was in Afghanistan. And one of the worst civilian things that happened, it didn't happen while I was there, but Tim Lynch talks about it, was the Taliban set off a bomb in a marketplace. And it happened to go off when there was some kind of school visit in the marketplace or something going on. And there was 50 children were injured, right? Killed and injured. And so we started running medevacs. Marine Corps started running medevacs. So he's in one of the Ospreys or the 53s that goes booming in there to medevac children during this mass casualties event in a marketplace. And we're responding because there wasn't Marines involved in it or Afghan soldiers. You know, it was just civilians. And responding, you know, my understanding is just as a humanitarian thing, right? So anyway, he's one of the Marines that's there to provide, you know, security for the Osprey or the 53, whatever it was, and then also assist in moving people onto the aircraft. And he said, when I met him, he came up to me and he's telling me the story. And he said, "I don't want to have kids. And it's causing a problem for my fiance and I. I can't get the scenes. You know, I'm covered in blood from carrying kids. They're screaming. Their mothers are screaming. We're in the aircraft. And we're flying to Leatherneck to the hospital there. And then we're carrying them and they're dying." And he said, "I can't get that out of my head." And then it seems like all these stories, they get worse, right? And so most people, he keeps it to himself. And then I think he's in Okinawa doing something on a deployment there. And the subject comes up and he's talking to other Marines. And Marines were like, "That's not combat, man. That's bullshit." So then he got told, like, "Yeah, your trauma ain't good enough. It doesn't qualify. So shut the fuck up." And it's just, you hear these stories and they're just, heartbreaking, right? So here you have this incredible, horrible event in your life. And then somebody says, "Yeah, man, that's not. Unless it deals with guns and shooting and shit, you know, shut the fuck up." So he comes by yesterday. And we're just about to start in the afternoon. So I said, "Hey, you know," so we talked for a few minutes. I said, "Don't go anywhere. So, you know, General Furness spoke, and then I spoke. And no, it was during a break, I think in the afternoon. So I said, and so the break is getting ready to finish, and he had come down to speak, talk to me during the break, and because some of his Marines were at post-traumatic winning. So I said, don't go anywhere. So I start again, and I said, before I start, though, I want to talk about that dude standing right there. And he's just standing there looking. I said, see that staff sergeant? And I tell a little bit of a story. I said, you're going to have the same opportunity for the same kind to walk down the path that he just walked down. So it's really cool the different stories that you can relate to Marines about Marines that sat in that theater a year and a half ago and how their lives have gone from a very, very black place, right, to lives of happiness and fulfillment because of what they learned in this class. So, so he's there and then leaves and sends me this really cool email. I think I mentioned yesterday that I went to lunch with another Marine that I'd met here, who grew up tough. The one person in his life that set him on a good path dies before that person can see him in his dress blues, which was a goal of his. I want him to see me in my dress blues. And did not happen. And then shortly thereafter, the second person who was instrumental in his life dies. Right? So the foundational people in your life are dying. And so anyway, so I meet him and meet his wife, and he's getting out of the Marine Corps, and he's got a job, and it's a good job. So all these, you know, all this turbulence is now giving way to, you know, sunshine. And that's the part. And today, here in a couple hours, I'll go have lunch with another one, right? Came to post-traumatic winning, didn't have trauma in his life. 90 days later, his dad commits suicide. And I came back here a year ago in August. And he said, he found me. And he said, I just want to thank you. Your class prepared me for what happened. And I knew what to do. And then I have a little audio cut that says, I'm not saying it was perfect and I'm not saying it was easy, but I knew what to do because of this class. So pay attention. So I'll meet him today. And so the thing that I've experienced this time that I haven't ever experienced before is seeing the fruits now of this kind of work. A year and a half later, the lives that have been changed. He, the last Marine I'm talking about, is Sergeant. He and his fiance are having a kid, and he's as happy as a clam. he's a good dude. And so, in the last 72 hours, the thing that has been different and that affirms this post-traumatic winning thing in even a bigger way is now to see these Marines that I've met that are, you know, that I meet, and they're in such black places, and that you can tell them the truth, and you can turn on a light with the truth that shows them the path, right? And that path is the path of post-traumatic winning. And so it's been incredible to talk to them and to hear their stories, and a year and a half later, see where they are. And as I said, to see the tangible fruits of lives being changed and people being transformed. And so it's been a different experience. So I hope that, I hope I come back here again and continue to work with the Marine 2nd Marine Division. And I also, this afternoon, going to get a chance to sit down with, you know, battalion commanders, regimental commanders, and talk about them doing what they do, which is they, on a monthly basis, they have to make this real, right? They have to do the counseling stuff, and they have to, and it's getting to know them. So telling them the truth isn't enough, right? It's on a monthly basis, leaders got to get to know people, and leaders turn over all the time. So the next person has to get to know, hold on, my alarm's going off for some reason. And so there's that constant turnover of leadership, and you have these Marines that are at risk, and these Marines that are at risk, if somebody neglects them, right, that's how bad stuff happens. And so institutionally, so what to me has been really interesting, and what today's gonna bring, is the institutional piece of how do you follow through on this institutionally to make it work. So you can present them the truth, and you can have people that are moved by that, that individually do things. How do you move the institution? And that's, to me, 2nd Marine Division does not know how far forward they are on this. And it's, and I don't say this because he's my friend. I say it because because it's true. General Furness, you know, has poured his heart into this because, you know, shortly after he took over the division, I want to say they had a series of suicides. And he said, I'm not having it anymore. I'm not, I am not losing, going to continue to lose Marines like this. And so he's put, you know, he's put his sweat into this and his heart into it. You know, yesterday watching him talk again about, you know, the things that, you know, he goes through. And so anyway, it's, it'll be interesting today to hear their perspective on it, in that, in post-traumatic winning, in the presentation, there's that quote from General Mattis that if you don't love them, you really need to get out, right? If you don't know them, if you don't love them, if all you know is their names and their digits, their social security number, their blood type, their, you know, their rifle serial number, right? Their, you know, their kill number, all the things, all the numbers that are significant in the Marine Corps. So, and a kill number is like your last four and your last initial, your initials and your last four. So, instead of putting names and full socials on rosters and things like that, when you're overseas and maybe going on a patrol, you put, kill numbers. Why do you call it a kill number? Well, in case you're killed, we can identify you by that number. I know. Couldn't we find a different way to say that? Yeah, probably. There's probably better ways to do that, but it is what it is. So what the hell? Because that's the next step in this, is how do you institutionalize knowing them better, loving them more, getting more out of them, and again, you know, better human being, better Marine, better warfighter, more lethal 2nd Marine Division. And that progression goes with any organization that, that goes down this road. You know, because the effort to control destructive behaviors of all kinds, right? Alcoholism, domestic violence, divorce, and whatnot, is an effort to improve your organization, which ultimately leads to greater lethality because you're not dealing with all this other stuff all the time. And why aren't you dealing with it? Because you know them better, you help them. But you can't help them if you don't know them. And I show the DOD and VA suicide hotline. And I said, and I say, how pathetic is this? We so don't know you. We so don't know what's going on in your head. that we'd ask you to call us before you kill yourself. But we don't know what's going on, so we don't know what you're doing. I mean, come on. And again, there's another, so that's linked to, you know, leadership at a distance, which is linked to, I send text messages and stuff like that. I don't really see him or her on a daily basis because we don't have formations. So that distance leads to isolation, leads to not knowing them, leads to the 800 number, right? I'll draw you another line. People who join the all-volunteer force are 50% more likely, twice as likely, to have traumatic events in their childhood, in their early years. So I say childhood, I mean less than 18 years of age. In terms of veteran suicide, veterans are twice as likely to commit suicide. Any correlation between those two numbers? I would say without a doubt there is. The first number represents, I would tell you, infrastructure damage to people. They're hurt. They're broken. And then we don't reach them. We don't know them. We don't fix them. And we don't help them cope. We offer to medicate them. We offer to help them endure it. But we don't offer anything beyond that. And if that's all you have, that's my grandson Finn running in and out. And if that's all you have, that's a tough road, man. When you're talking about some of these things, you know, that I've talked to you about, some of these stories, and somebody offers you endurance, we'll medicate you, and you can come tell your story over and over again and talk with guys about it. And is that it? Is that all you got for me? Okay, well, let me just, I don't really want to do that. And so I'll just kind of do what I would tell you the majority of veterans do, which is handle it on their own. And there's got to be a better way than that. And so to me, the damage done in youth that sends you looking for something better, and the military is often an avenue for that. Okay, but we don't go there with them. We don't address those things. Ultimately down the road, right, manifests itself in a higher suicide rate. Twice as likely to have that kind of abuse, twice as likely to commit suicide. Interesting. So you see these. So you see these themes, and it's really interesting. So anyway, good morning to you on a Friday. There's not going to be a second hour today because I didn't have time to record something with my guest celebrity chef, which is going to be my daughter-in-law, Susie. So you'll meet Susie next week. Susie, as Kim says, she's a big-time foodie. And she's also a CrossFit girl. And so we'll talk about fitness, food, and you'll get a chance to meet her. But we'll do an hour. So from Holly Springs, North Carolina, on a Friday, welcome to All Marine Radio. And again, I just can't express, I mean, how cool this coming back here again has been. And post-traumatic winning is always profound. Oh, it's like drinking out of a profound fire hydrant. And, it's not overwhelming at times, but it's a lot, right? It's profound stuff, and it's a lot of it in a short period of time. And I would never use the word overwhelming because it's not. Because if you've been a Marine, this is what's real, and it's not overwhelming, right? And in for me, now that I've done it for a while, it makes my heart leap because I know where they're going to go. I know where they're going to go. And I'll tell you what, I hesitate to say this because it's kind of like talking about a no-hitter, but I haven't had anybody I've met that I've introduced these concepts to that has turned back and gone the other way. That's pretty interesting. these people who have come forward, and there's a lot of them. I haven't met anybody yet that once they experience this different form of life, who's got, now I'm sure at some point it'll happen. So, but it is kind of interesting. And again, the damage that I'm talking about is not, you know, my parents got divorced and I really struggle with it. It's not that kind of damage. It is, you know, horrible, horrible stuff. So, again, this week has been, you know, the last few days have been absolutely wonderful. You know, to include the people at the theater, they were really cool in terms of, you know, at the Base Theater, we used to use a portable projector down in front and then the speakers that you plug into down there. And because I got this 1,000-foot remote, I asked, is it possible that we use the projector that you guys use for the Base Theater? And they said, well, sure, we can try, but normally, you know, we don't do that. And I said, well, do you mind? And the lady was, her name's Darla. And she said, no. So we go up there. And they made it work. And, so the visuals were better. The audio was better. So it was cool. It was cool. So, no, it's been, but again, something new. And that is a year and a half later, to see the profound difference in the lives of people who were in such deep blackness and then be able to relate that to Marines sitting there saying, in your seats, you know, over a year ago, these guys were sitting there, right? And then, you know, one of them happens to show up and got a chance to embarrass him. And so, so great stuff. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem, as is our custom, on this Friday morning. Good morning to you. And this is dedicated to a couple of groups of people. No, it's dedicated to one Marine who came up to me yesterday and who'd never spoken about the things that bothered him. And he's representative of a whole bunch of guys that came up yesterday. My grandson brushing his teeth with his electric toothbrush. I'm going to get to go to his school and see it. He goes to an outdoor school here. So I asked my son, what do they do when it rains? And he points to a raincoat. He goes, they got boots. There's a rain jacket. They put hats on. And, yeah, they have a covered area, but, yeah, it's an outdoor school. It's crazy. So I'm going to get to go see that. But anyway, yeah, an outdoor preschool. So so this is dedicated to him. And I hope everybody who showed up yesterday can see a path to a place where not only you can live a good life, you can live a great life. That we don't, most of us don't have any choice over the trauma that comes into our life, but all of us have a choice relative to the way we react to that. And what post-traumatic winning is about telling you the truth, that you're not going to get over it. Time's not going to heal that wound. And all you got to do to understand that is turn on the History Channel. 80 years later, right, there's men who can't remember where they put their car keys 3 seconds ago, who can't remember shit about their life, but they can talk in high definition, slow motion about their combat experiences. Pretty amazing stuff. And so that's, again, just evidence that you don't get over it. You need to talk about it, right? You need to stay physically fit. You need to stay away from alcohol, right? You need to learn the wellness techniques and practices. You need to live with self-discipline. And if you do those things, those are the steps down the road to living a great, great life. And if you can take all that and then begin to share it with others and change their lives and help them and give, what you'll do with your life is something that you don't even understand right now. And it's hard for me to articulate it. And that's the power of these Marines that are in the presentation to Marines that are sitting in those seats a year later. Right. And, as I said, it's been a wonderful week. So, this is to get dedicated to that Marine and every Marine like them and every person who listens to this program that's like that. Right? There is a better place. You can go there. There's nothing magical about it. If you will do these things, you will go there. Okay? It is simply walking down a different path. Okay? The path to destructive behavior starts with isolation. Right? Continues with not talking about it. Right? Continues probably with not great fitness. Continues with don't have good wellness practices. Continues and then is exacerbated by financial problems and then alcohol. Put that toxic cocktail together and you can see. You can see how, you can see how bad things happen. Conversely, if you stop faking it, if you will talk about it, if you understand you're not going to get over it, right? If you stay fit, if you manage your money, if you stay away from alcohol, if you understand wellness and how to meditate a little bit, how to do operational meditation, as I call it, with taking a deep breath and blowing it out, in the course of your day when something, turbulent happens, you can do that. You can do that. It's not magical. And so this is dedicated to him, to that group of people, and to that proposition, that there is an awesome place that you can live your life. So, it's dedicated to him.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fighting. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, time to check the weather here. My grandson Finn is in here. How are you, Finn? You're good? Can you say hi to everybody? Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
All right, now I'm going to go to your school today, right? And what am I going to see? You go to school indoors or outdoors?
Outdoors.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
You do. All right, and you guys have a water. You guys have a water slide at your school?
Yeah. It's fake.
It's a fake water slide.
Yeah, but it's fake water trees.
Really? Now you found a lizard the other day, yes?
Yeah, and I held it.
So when you holded it, what did it do? Did it just sit there, or did it try to get away?
It tried to get away, but it tickled, and then I dropped it.
When you dropped it, did it run away?
Yeah.
Yeah, they would probably be pretty scared because you're a giant to that lizard, right? All right, there you have it. Finn Oden. Yeah, 4 years old, so going to get to go to preschool and see where Finn goes to school. Well, currently in Quantico, it's 67 degrees and sunny. Down the coast here in North Carolina, it is 74 degrees under sunny skies. In Tornado Palms, it is sun coming up and 82 degrees. So that means it's going to be hot in 29 Palms. Kent Pendleton, pretty typical. Clouds in 63. Yes. Oh, those are mine. The Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy in 74. Okinawa, dark cloudy and 80 degrees in the South Central Province. The South Central part of Afghanistan, the Helmand Province, it is sunny and 107, and in Iraq, in western Iraq, in Ramadi, it is sunny and 109, the places that Marines are today. At the home, at the corporate headquarters of All Marine Radio, it's 65, where I will be tomorrow afternoon, and looking for a high today of 74 degrees, 72 tomorrow, and 71 on Sunday, so low or moderate temperature. We'll take a break. More of All Marine Radio from Holly Ridge, North Carolina. Why are you talking to me when I'm talking? Huh? Yeah, more of me and Finn here next on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara. And you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so. Drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears. When I reach there, I'll scream, yeah, I'll let it all out. But right now it's just me.
Peyton Davis here on a Friday singing my favorite song that she sings, and that's a song called Hurt. Keep Peyton and her family and the family of F-18 man as we know him, but Kurt, in your prayers as they deal with the loss of Peyton's younger sister to COVID-19. So, a horrible week for them. We'll check some news headlines here. And as I said before, won't be a second hour today because of the expeditionary nature of this week. And I got to go see my grandson's school. interesting story in Stars and Stripes. And, you know, kind of, you know, you wondered, well, what was going on, right, relative to the whole Theodore Roosevelt? Why, when you have an admiral on the same ship, why does it seem so screwed up? Why is this captain, you know, not in lockstep with this admiral to take care of this problem? Do they not see it the same way? And so, headline, report reveals miscommunication, missteps, and handling of the Theodore Roosevelt virus outbreak. And this is Caitlin Dornbos for Stars and Stripes. a deeper dive into the coronavirus outbreak aboard the USS Ranger. USS Ranger, where did that come from? Aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt in March found missteps by senior commanders exacerbated conditions on the warship, according to a month-long investigation by the Navy. Those findings prompted Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Mike Gilday to reverse his recommendation from April to reinstate Brett Crozer. I want to know more about it. Crozer was at the helm of the Roosevelt when it diverted to Guam on March 26 after several sailors tested positive for the coronavirus. He was later removed from command after a letter he emailed his Navy superiors pleading for help surfaced in the San Francisco Chronicle. The ship remained in Guam two more months as sailors were isolated, tested, and treated. Ultimately, 1,150 Roosevelt sailors tested positive. One has died. Admiral Robert Burke, until June 8, the Vice Chief of Naval Operations, conducted the investigation, whose results were released on June 20th. So then it kind of documents the actions that were taken. So they identified the virus on the ship. Common areas and activities such as gyms, the ship store, library, and chapel services remained open despite concerns of coronavirus exposure. The galleys, self-service buffets were discontinued, but salad bars were still allowed. Social distancing measures were not enforced, the investigation found. Specifically, no seats were removed from line. Lines continued to form without 6 feet of separation between sailors. Condiments were available for common use. Even when the Navy issued guidance on March 12th that required 6 feet between individuals when possible and discouraged mass gatherings, social distancing was not observed on the way to Guam. Crozier believed the March 12th guidance did not apply very well to deployed aircraft carriers, the report said. Meanwhile, Navy leaders said Maudley, down to Admiral Stuart Baker, who was aboard the carrier, as commander of the Roosevelt Strike Group, became increasingly involved in response plans, according to the report. Baker asked the 7th Fleet for 4,000 rooms to isolate sailors for 2 weeks, it said. That was not an option, Baker was told, because Maudley publicly stated none of the crew would be allowed to leave the pier, according to the report. By the time the ship reached Guam, 33 sailors had tested positive. The Pacific Fleet prioritized testing all sailors. 7th Fleet wanted sailors to disembark. Crozer wanted single rooms for each crew member. One day after the ship's arrival, 46 sailors had become infected, and Crozer believed quarantining sailors aboard the ship was only making the problem worse, the report said. Sounds true to me. Meanwhile, there was true human suffering in the carrier's cramped aft berthing as more sailors required quarantine. But when cots were made available in warehouses and storerooms ashore, Crozer turned them down because they were not single occupancy and thousands of sailors remained on board, according to the report. To me, that decision, right? I mean, again, the difference between other services and the Marine Corps, that would have been, you know, had this been a Marine event, you know, the ship pulls into port, you know, it ties off, the brows get put aboard the ship, and you'd have seen Marines walking off that ship with their packs, right, with their sleep systems, and we wouldn't have even initially required cots. If you could supply them, that's fine. But we've got sleeping mats. We'll sleep on the concrete. We'll sleep on the grass. It doesn't matter to us. But if we need to get off the ship, we need to social distance, we'll find a way to do that. You know. Gilday on June 19th told reporters that Crozier determined that onboard quarantine was ineffective. Should have led to an acceleration of sailors ashore accommodations. It did not. Instead, on March 30th, Crozier emailed his letter to Pacific Fleet, Naval Air Forces Pacific, and the strike group. Crozier described the letter as a red flare, but did not intend for it to be given to the press, the report said. Crozier stated that his intent in sending the letter was to stop the administrative bureaucracy and bring focus back to what he thought was the best course of action to get off the ship. Ultimately, Pacific Fleet, 7th Fleet, and the strike group said the letter did not increase support for the ship. Pacific Fleet said that was because we had already been examining all the options to get sailors off safely. San Francisco Chronicle published the letter, mildly relieved Crozier for the following day for the loss of confidence. The so interesting little letter is more of the, you know, who shot who comes out in this. But again, I mean, you know, demanding single rooms for every sailor. Is that in their best interest? Is that what they need? Or do, you know, again, you can phase into that. Phase one is going to be a cot in a warehouse and we'll social distance there. Okay, we can do that. We control it. We can do it this afternoon. No, that's not good enough. Really? And then as we can open other accommodations, we will move people to those accommodations. Right? And the order of movement is the most junior sailor goes first, but that's not how the Navy does it. The Navy, unless it's changed, has this thing, you know, RHIP. What? Rank has its privileges. Oh. So what does that mean? Oh, that means the officers and the senior enlisted sailors will, they don't call themselves sailors. The officers and the senior enlisted naval personnel, they will leave the warehouse first. And the junior, you know, sailors will go last. Which is the exact opposite of the way we're raised in the Marine Corps. Right? Who eats last? Right? You know, when Chow shows up and you're out in the field, who eats last? The officers and the staff NCOs. That's why you better have somebody scooping out that chow that understands portion control, or else you're not going to eat. Which sucks, right? So, anyway, that way everybody gets fed, even the people at the back of the line. But I'll tell you a quick funny story. I was, I'm a first lieutenant. I'm the executive officer of the Marine Detachment on the Ranger. And we're at sea, you know, we're out in the North Arabian Sea. And we had been pretty close to the Iranian coast. So we're constantly at general quarters. And, you know, so I wasn't able to go to chow because my general quarters station was up on the bridge. Because I controlled all the machine guns and 50 cals and everything we had on the external part of the ship. So, you know, I'd be up there forever. And so we come out of general quarters because I think we broke 50 miles from the coast of Iran. And then, but we were turning into the wind and we were going to go back in. But when we broke general quarters, the ship's door opened. So I wanted to run down and buy some cookies so I had something to eat. So I run down there, and I come around the corner, and here's the line to get in the ship's door. Now, there's two lines. There's a line for officers and senior enlisted, and there's a line for everybody else. So I get in the line with everybody else. Because the way this works in the Marine Corps is that if I'm working and I need to go to the front of the line because my job doesn't allow me to stand in that line, then that's appropriate. Okay? And it's appropriate for any Marine. If it's a PFC and they're on watch and they don't have the time, they walk to the front of the line. Because they're working. The rest of us aren't, right? And they're on the clock. So, anyway, there's a requirement that they get fed and they go back to work. So, I walk and I get in line. The long line. And you have Navy, you have sailors in their blue coveralls. You have, you know, the guys who work on the flight deck in their, you know, their different colored, you know, turtlenecks. And so I stand in line for about 20 minutes with these guys. And, you know, I'm moving forward with them. And finally, one of them turns and looks at me. And he says, hey, Lieutenant, you know, there's another line that for you. Like, I was a dumbass, right? And the guy's going to, like... And I looked at him and I said, yeah, I know. And with that, all these heads turn. And so the guy, the sailor who said that to me, looks at me and he says, well, why aren't you using that line? I said, we don't do that in the Marine Corps. And now a bunch of them turned and looked at me and they said, what do you mean? And I said, well, in the Marine Corps, we go to the back of the line. You guys go first. You guys are working your ass off. Look at you. You're covered in grease and shit. Right? You got to be taken care of before I'm taken care of. Now, right? So when we came out of general quarters, I came down here to get cookies. I'm not on watch up there. I will be here in probably the next 30 minutes. But when it's my free time, my free time is no more important than your free time. And arguably, to me, you're important. Your free time is more important. So I stand in the back line. And now they look at me and they say, why isn't the Navy like that? I said, I don't know, man. You have to talk to them. Now, at about this time, on the Ranger, right, the store was like, almost right across the passageway from the chief's mess. So this dude rolls out of the chief mess, and chiefs historically, right, are packing a few extra pounds. So he's in his khaki uniform. He's got a toothpick in his mouth. And he walks out of the chief mess, and he looks around. And then he walks into the store. Well, when he walks into the store, it means, right, the next person that walks out, right, the guy who's waiting in line can't go in when that person goes out, right? He has to wait till another person goes, and the line doesn't move because this guy goes in. So that's the way the line worked. And so this guy rolls into the store, and these guys all turn around and look at me. And I shrugged. And they just shook their heads. So anyway, maybe a little bit different relative to privileges. Or at least it was. Maybe they've reformed themselves. But I remember our chief engineer threw a fit when his laundry wasn't folded one day. And I was sitting there thinking, man, I'm just happy if I get it all back. And he wants his shit folded. And he said, look, you know, I was a seaman. I did this stuff, right? Rank does have its privileges. And, you know, this laundry should be folded. I was like, yeah. Anyway, more headlines from Stars and Stripes. Remains of 6 service members killed in the Korean War are on their way to U.S. soil. We've been talking about there's been some repatriation of remains going on in a ceremony at Osan Air Base in South Korea. That happened yesterday. U.S. lawmakers pressed Congress to have a thorough oversight of Afghan troop drawdown. And bipartisan is important here because it's not, when you see bipartisan groups, it's not just, you know, members of Congress grandstanding. So it's something else. A bipartisan group of U.S. lawmakers has introduced a bill that would require Congress to oversee the drawdown of American troops from Afghanistan amid concerns that too rapid a drawdown would threaten U.S. and global security. So again, is the president going to do what President Obama did? And, you know, there's an election coming up and he wants to be able to stand on his achievement in Afghanistan. So that in the news. Rising violence could further stall peace talks. Peace talks with the Taliban are unlikely to start if violence remains high throughout Afghanistan. The head of the country's reconciliation team said this week. So, again, this is all of this, right? All of this is linked together. Taliban expectations that the United States is going to unass Afghanistan. We're in a position not to negotiate, so maybe we shouldn't negotiate. We'll let the United States leave because Donald Trump wants to leave. The election's coming up, and then we'll lay waste to the country. So here's the story. Peace talks with the Taliban are unlikely to start if violence remains high. Escalating violence remains a serious challenge, said Abdullah Abdullah. Now, Abdullah Abdullah is the chairman of Kabul's High Council for National Reconciliation. This was part of the power-sharing agreement that got agreed to last month when election results were contested, and he specifically contested them, right, from President Ghani, with President Ghani, right? So now this is him speaking in that capacity. The continuing level of violence, which is not justified at all, it makes the people worry and extremely concerned, he said. That makes the political environment very difficult. I hope everybody gets the message. So anyway, there's been, you know, there's been prisoner exchanges and all kinds of stuff in Afghanistan. So hurdles remain, and one of the flies in the ointment is the American drawdown there, right? And where that leaves Afghanistan and Afghanistan's military. From my favorite website, Just the News. Top headline is Hunter Biden's Ukraine firm landed a deal with USAID program while under corruption investigation. Of course they did. Of course they did. And there's an interesting story from a Texas hospital CEO. All right, here's, let me read you the headline. COVID inpatient count misinterpreted. Level of alarm is unwarranted in Texas. Interesting, eh? In Texas, a focal point of national anxiety about coronavirus second wave, the state counts every COVID positive hospital patient as a hospitalization for COVID itself, which may be exaggerating numbers. This stuff is every day. It's, you know, it's unbelievable. Health officials in Texas are logging every single COVID-19 positive hospital patient in the state as a COVID-19 hospitalization, even if the patient themselves are admitted seeking treatment for something other than the coronavirus. Unbelievable. That policy may be serving to artificially inflate what seems like a significant COVID-19 surge in the state. Texas has lately been the focal point of national anxiety over concerns that a second wave of coronavirus has begun there after the state began reopening nearly 2 months ago. Well, of course there's going to be a second wave. Like, when you hit the play button, what do you think is going to happen? That it disappeared? Good one. COVID-19 hospitalizations there have been on a steady upward track for the last 2 weeks, per the state's dashboard, which on Thursday recorded about 4,400 hospitalizations in the state. But at least part of the trend may be due to liberal coding policies by state officials. Lindsay Rosales, a spokeswoman for the Texas Department of State Health Services, confirmed to Just the News this week that the state is categorizing every inpatient in the state with a positive COVID-19 test as a COVID-19 hospitalization. The number of hospitalized patients includes patients with a lab-confirmed case of COVID-19, even if the person is admitted to the hospital for a different reason. Asked if inpatients in the state are tested for COVID-19 whenever they arrive for the treatment, Rosales said, Hospitals set their own protocols for determining when and if to test patients for COVID-19. Interesting. At a virtual press conference on Thursday, the chief executives for Houston's Methodist Memorial Hermann Health System, St. Luke's Health, and Texas Children's Hospitals stated that their hospitals were well prepared to handle an even greater increase in patients than that which had emerged in the last few weeks. The number of hospitalizations are being misinterpreted, said Houston's Methodist CEO Mark Boom. And quite frankly, we're concerned that there is a level of alarm in the community that is unwarranted right now. We do have the capacity to care for many more patients and lots of fluidity and ability to manage. He pointed out that the hospital 1 year ago was at 95% ICU capacity, similar to the numbers the hospital is seeing today. It is completely normal for us to have ICU capacities that run in the 80s and 90s, he said. That's how hospitals operate. He noted that around 25% of ICU patients are COVID-19 positive, that the hospital has many levers at our in our ability to adjust the ICU, claiming that the hospital capacity regularly reported to the media is base capacity rather than surge capacity. Texas Children's Hospital CEO Mark Wallace added that the facility has a lot of capacity. We have the ability to take care of all the Houstonians that need critical care, that need to be operated or acute care. There, and then he goes on, there's not a scenario, in my opinion, where the demand for our beds would eclipse our capacity. I cannot imagine that. I just cannot. So interesting. And again, one of the things, you know, the article alludes to a coding, right? A coding, liberal coding policies. Well, why would there be, what's the case for that? Well, there's a higher rate of compensation depending on what codes you use. If you're using COVID codes, they pay higher than maybe other codes you would use. Oh, money, the root of all evils. Yeah, now I get it. Now it makes more sense to me. So, interesting. Top stories in Marine Corps Times today. So again, I mean, you know what? It's like anything else. I mean, even post-traumatic winning. You know, you see a statistic, and the question is, you know, can we footnote it? And then once you get all the footnotes, the statistic looks a lot different. And again, my beef with the media, my beef with the media is this. They don't do that anymore. Because if the headline for the other story, you know, surge in coronavirus cases, blah, 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 then that's the story that we're going to run. And it's just, to me, it's discouraging because we now live in a country where the truth doesn't matter, because what matters in commercial journalism is clicks and views, and that drives everything. So I think it's a sad state of affairs. Top five stories in Early Bird, and then I'm done for the day. I get to go watch Finn at his outdoor school for a little bit. Number one, yeah. You know, so we're sitting at dinner, and he's telling the story of finding this lizard outside. Right? And it's, you know, it's hilarious. Little kids outside all day running around playing, right? Or at least for the hours that he's there, right? Top five stories. Number one, the military is drawing down its U.S.-Mexico border mission. Sort of. The DOD announced Thursday it would keep deploying troops to the southern border to assist Customs and Border Patrol through October of 2021. On the other, the new limit is 4,000, a drop of 1,500 from the previous cap. So the mission continues. They have flexibility in terms of what they do, at least through October of 2021. But if you look at the numbers and how those numbers are coming down, what are they still doing down there? Number two, Army ditches promotion photos as part of its effort to eliminate unconscious bias. Unconscious bias. I think if you look at a photo and you make a judgment because of somebody's race, then that's not unconscious bias. That's conscious bias. But anyway. Number three, Army leaders hold off banning Confederate symbols, renaming installations. The Army has itself a problem. They have Fort Bragg in North Carolina, named after Braxton Bragg. Right, Fort Benning in Georgia. Benning was a general in the Confederate Army, fought in Gettysburg. And so Fort Polk, Fort A.P. Hill, all Confederate generals. So the Army's got a problem. And again, I've said this for years, but I don't. And again, the question, how far does all of this go? To me, and I was thinking about this earlier today, what was done, if you study Civil War history and post-Civil War history, what was done after the Civil War by intellectuals in the South to legitimize their fight for slavery was advancing the argument that it was about states' rights. Right, and you can find some pretty interesting, right, and if you cherry-pick history, you can craft an argument that that's what the Civil War is about. If you cherry-pick history. If you go to the source documents, though, it becomes problematic. But intellectually, it made a much better argument than we fought for slavery. No, that's not what it was about. It was about states' rights to choose. And then you go look at the source documents, and they're like specifically citing slavery. So anyway, but that was the narrative, right, of this heroic cause that they engaged in. And that their heroes were every bit as legitimate as the Northern heroes. And in order to bind the wounds of the nation, right? I mean, that's what they did in their states. And they were allowed to put up monuments. So that was the narrative. That people who fought in a rebellion were allowed to be lionized in public through these statues and things like that. Okay. And then the naming of the bases. I mean, Southern Democrats, Dixiecrats, were a powerful force in Congress. I mean, so who gives a shit what they name the base? Because we need their vote on this. We need their vote on this. Okay, they want it, give it to them. So, Lowell, these years later, I think what we're coming to, the end of is that narrative of the Civil War. That the American Civil War, and again, the footnoted study of it is not pretty because you have Lincoln saying, and again, Lincoln, lionized as a great emancipator. Well, that's not who Lincoln was. Lincoln's statement about slavery at the start of the war. If I can save the Union and not free a slave, I will save the Union. If in order to save the Union, I have to free all the slaves, I will free every one of them. But I will save the Union. I mean, I know we want to lionize him as a great emancipator because he actually took that action. But when you read history, it doesn't read like that. It doesn't follow the narrative, right, in this debate that we were having in the country. So, we're finally settling that the Civil War was a rebellion, and that the romantic version of Southern history might not be as accurate as it should be. And also that in order to bind the wounds of the nation, allowing the South certain latitude, Southern states certain latitude, and who federal military installations were named for, was something that, while it may have been appropriate at the time, while it may have been appropriate at the time, that time is gone in our nation's history. And it is time to put that narrative to rest and time to correct that, because those times are no longer with us. And that's as we evolve as a nation. So, again, Trey Gowdy asked, How far does this go? You know what? The people that are doing it, they don't give a shit about the debate. They don't give a shit about the discussion. And so, I mean, this is the stuff that totalitarian regimes do when they destroy their history. And then those people in short order are gone. So, and the sooner that happens, the better off all of us will be. But anyway, this is an article by Ryan Kempfer. He's a longtime writer for Military Times. Headline: Army leaders hold off banning Confederate symbols, which the Marine Corps and the Navy have already done, renaming installations. The Army announced several measures on Thursday to reduce the possibility of racial bias within its promotion and military justice systems, but banning Confederate flags and renaming posts bearing the names of Confederate military commanders will have to wait, possibly for a Pentagon-wide order. Quote, "We are advisors," Army Chief of Staff General James McConville said during a press conference, "and we pass that military advice to our civilian leaders, and they are working through that and trying to come up with a long-term and enduring policy. We certainly have some ideas on the best way to do this, whether it's the symbology of certain things or taking a look at what the names of certain posts should be," McConville said. In early June, Army leaders and Defense Secretary Mark Esper said they were open to discussion on renaming Army posts that bear Confederate commanders' names. But President Donald Trump tweeted on June 10th that his administration will not even consider the move. It's going to happen. It's simply a question of time. That apparently doesn't mean the idea is dead. Congress could ultimately push the issue forward, even as the Army waits for Defense Department-wide policy. And I would tell you, expect to certainly see that. And the question is, what will the House Democrats can put Senate Republicans in a difficult place relative to the president? I don't think it's morally difficult at all. I think the right thing to do is to rename those bases. So the House passes a measure calling for those bases to be renamed. And they may or may not include the new names in that legislation after a hearing or two or three. And then they send that on to the Senate. The Senate can decide not to act and face the howls of people and pressure from their constituents, which puts Republican senators in a bad spot. Or they can choose to pass it, and then the president could veto it. So we shall see. We shall see. Next story, lightning in her veins, how Katie Arrington is convincing defense contractors to love cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is, I would tell you, one of the single most important issues right now. What the Chinese have done to the United States is an absolute joke. It's an absolute positive joke. So this is a story on an internet publication that covers command and control issues. And Katie Arrington is a charge, of cybersecurity. So interesting article. Last story from the top five is backlogs, extra pay, and priority units. How the Navy plans to get sailors moving again. All right, so that is all she wrote for the program today, man. Yeah. I will see you on Monday back at from Studio One in Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area of Southern California. And I'm not even sure what the hell we're doing Monday. So I'll figure it out. But it's been a great few days here in North Carolina at Camp Lejeune with the 2nd Marine Division again. And but it's been different. And it's been different because a year after this work has begun, through the efforts of the leadership of at every level in this division, just about every Marine here has seen this presentation. And their numbers are amazing. And they've opened doors all across the country to change other people's lives. And they're very, very far down the road to institutionalizing the idea of know them better and love them in the daily lives of Marines. And that will ultimately save lives. So it's been awesome. So on a Friday, I'm headed to outdoor preschool. You fired up about that. Have a great weekend. And most importantly, don't be afraid to change somebody's life. It's pretty cool. Out.